But I think that is also part of the transitioning from a marathon runner into a trail runner, is we literally eat on the run.
Sunny, I was going to ask you, if you had to choose your top like four go-to items on an aid station, what would they be and why?
Sunny, I have to say, I was mentioning to Faith and Don, I said, is it sacrilegious to be doing a podcast with Sunny Blende while I'm eating some McDonald's French fries?
Possibly.
I know. I'm better than this.
It's raw and uncut, and that's what's happening with this one. That's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
I like that.
Correct, because the water in your stomach is not doing anything. It's not helping you at all. It's not yours yet until it gets into your bloodstream.
I'll say I'm Faith Goss. You say I'm Don Freeman. And, oh, okay. Faith Goss got one, Don Freeman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we recording?
And action.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Faith Goss.
I'm Scott War.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today we're joined by Scott, who is out on the road somewhere between Fresno and Sacramento, pulled in some parking lot on a Skype line. So he's joined us today remotely. And so welcome, Scott.
Why, thank you.
And we also have Sunny Blende, who is the trail nutritionist. She has not only been and is an ultra runner herself, but she's known throughout the community as the guru. If you want to know what to eat, when to eat, she is the one to talk to. In fact, in Born to Run by Chris McDougall, she's featured in there. She serves as Scott Jurek's nutritionist advisor within that book. And so she's qualified. She's also an instructor at a local community college. Which college is that? If we wanted to take a class from Sunny Blende, where would we go, Sunny?
You would go to College of Marin.
The great College of Marin. She has her Master of Science, and she's a sports nutritionist. You can find Sunny at sunnyblende.com. No, you can find her at eat4fitness.com. eat4fitness.com. She is joining us today to talk a little bit about transitioning from a marathon distance or half marathon distance to the ultra distance, the 50K, because there is a step there, isn't there, Sunny?
There is a step. And part of that step has a lot to do with nutrition.
You know, one of the things that I notice about a marathon is they really don't have food banquet tables like we have in the ultra.
Not at all. Usually running in a marathon, you can often get away with a gel at mile 12, a gel at 18, and sports drink and water the rest of the way. And that's not going to get you too far down the trail.
We look at the distance of a mid-packer-ish in a marathon, and we're looking about 4 hours, give or take, on either side of that. And you know, our bodies, and please correct me here if I'm misleading anybody, that our bodies have enough nutrition already on board from the time we wake up to get us about to that wall, whatever that might be. Is that accurate, Sunny?
Right. Depending on how much carbohydrates you've loaded with or you have in your body, you might be able to make the whole marathon if you've trained your fat burning system. If not, you'll hit that wall somewhere around 18 to 22 miles. And you might need something else, which is why they have some aid in marathons. But certainly transitioning from a road marathon to a trail 50K has some differences. I would say in the training, it's not actually that much different. Your distance increases, your surface changes, but because you're adding a few more miles and you're adding it on trails, that's going to decrease the intensity. So already your intensity is slowed down a little bit, which means that you might be able to transition pretty easily. The difference in nutrition, however, becomes really different, because where you could just eat a little bit during that 3.5 to 4.5 hours during a marathon, now you're in your first ultra 50K and you've got at least a couple more hours to go after that. And if you are hitting the wall towards the end of the marathon, you wouldn't make the finish line in a 50K without knowing how to either prevent hitting the wall, hopefully, or at least pushing it way back.
Yeah, Sunny, and if I can jump in and say, so we look at the somebody that goes from a marathon to either a 50K or a 50 mile, and that leap isn't uncommon. From marathon to 50 mile, that's happened.
It's uncommon, but not done.
And if you look at the mid-pack time there, we're talking now in between, not the four-hour-ish, but we may be into 6 to 12 hours that somebody could be out there enduring that event and traveling through those miles. So you can't do that with what you had on board from the morning and a couple of goos along the way.
No.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, Don, are you saying a mid-packer is going to finish a 50-miler in 6 hours?
No, I tried to give pad my remark by saying 50K to 50 mile.
I'm sorry.
I saw my error of my ways, and I was hoping to spread the risk with the 50K comment.
Okay.
I was going to say, before we get too far ahead, even I wanted to know about the different surfaces. Like if you're transitioning from a road marathon even just to a trail marathon, can you even require more nutrition right there based on the fact that you're changing surfaces, you're adding in more hills? Does the trail surface really take a lot more out of you than the road surface?
Trail marathon, probably mile per mile, might not take that much more out of you because you are going slower. So your intensity is turned down. It's certainly taking a lot more muscles. But because that intensity is turned down, that's the very reason that you can now eat more. You can actually take up more fuel. Because if you think about it, you know, and you watch a world-class marathoner, you know, they're moving at a very high pace. Their stomachs couldn't handle a lot of food. You know, maybe liquids fine, but not food at that intensity. But as we slow down, our body allows us to digest a little bit more, to take in a little bit more calories. Mm-hmm. And that's where ultramarathoning really counts, because if you don't get enough nutrition along the way, you won't reach the finish line. Nutrition becomes critical.
And perhaps that's why through trial and error and experience that when we go out to these ultra marathons, the banquet tables are just filled with all kinds of goodies. And I remember the first time I saw a banquet table filled with everything, I thought, wow, I've found my sport.
That's what I thought too. And in fact, I have actually run a few ultras with my little plastic baggie to get some M&Ms, because I love M&Ms, but not while I'm running. So I take M&Ms towards the end of a ultra, one of the aid stations, and that's my treat when I cross the finish line.
That's good. You know, and there are things like, as we're kind of on that topic, there are things like Oreo cookies, right? Double stuffed variety.
There's a lot of stuff out there, some of which probably doesn't need to be out there as much. We're finding more and more, the longer and the more ultra marathons that there are out there, the less and less people are eating the Oreo cookies, and in fact, most of the cookies. They still want the saltiness, but if they want their sugars, they're usually doing it more in gels or chews or things like that. And I actually have come up with kind of three rules for not just transitioning, but three rules for ultra-marathoning nutrition anyway, and they are, one, experiment in training. Two, formulate a plan. And three, race with flexibility.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Let's work through those 3 points.
Right.
Let's start with point number one.
Hey, wait, let me get my pad and pen down here. I need to write this down.
That's a problem with my podcast. I always need a pad and pencil.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, for the record, where are you right now?
I am in Sausalito looking over Mount Tam where I was running this morning.
Oh, you're lucky. And wow. Scott, where are you located, Scott War?
I am on the opposite extreme in Stockton, California, in a parking lot.
He doesn't want to tell us what parking lot on our nutritional podcast.
No.
I'm gonna share it because he's so far away from it.
Let's just say that I'm at a fast food restaurant that offers free Wi-Fi access.
So your golden arches look a little different than Sunny's golden arches, doesn't it? With her Mount Tam view.
Right.
Mm. Got it. Okay. Sorry, Sunny, for the interruption. I'm ready for it. Everybody has their pen and pencil now.
Okay. Experiment in training. So that means one of the things I often tell my newer runners is, eat until you get sick. So you got to do this in training. And what I really mean by that is not to make yourself sick, but to try and eat more calories when you're out there running on the trails. Because when you were faster on the roads at the seam, pounding, the trails are a little bit more forgiving to your GI system, to your gut. And you never know. Maybe instead of taking in 100 calories an hour, you can take in 200 calories an hour. Or what if you can take in almost 300 calories an hour? The more you can take in, the better it's going to be, because when you get into ultra distances, it's a deficit calorie sport. You are going to use more calories than you can take in. So the longer you can push off that deficit and the less of a deficit you can have, the better. So experiment in training. I often think for a new runner, the sports nutrition products are pretty good. They've, you know, had millions of dollars worth of research, and they take the fiber out and they put in usually just what you need, which is glycogen kind of sugar, probably some electrolytes, and maybe something to make it palatable. So that works pretty well. If you've been running a few ultras, like 5 or 6 or 10 or so, you might be getting pretty sick of some of those same gels and same sports nutrition products. And by then, your stomach has probably also figured out, well, you know, if he or she's going to keep doing this all the time, I'm going to kind of widen my perspective here and take in anything that they want to give me. And yeah, then you can start to eat the real food. So start out with the nutrition products. You know that they're the same. They're consistent. So if you find something that works for you, you know you've got something at least to get you through your first ultra. Go to the website of your first ultra, see what they're serving. Try that first, because you have to carry a lot less. And then broaden out a little bit from there. So if you can run 4 hours on gels and sports drinks and things like that, then try a sandwich in the fifth hour.
Scott, Sunny, Scott, what do you train with when you're training? What do you run with food-wise?
Well, you know, before I answer that question, I had a very good question. Faith, and you can determine whether this is a good question or not.
Well, but
Sunny, do you have to train your body to absorb the maximum? I mean, we've talked about this, that the magic number of calories you can absorb typically is between 300 and 340 calories an hour. Is a new runner that's transitioning from a marathon to an ultra marathon, do they have to train their body to absorb those calories? Or, I mean, you mentioned that you should eat until you're sick.
Slowly. So not the first week. There's no way that someone who's used to eating 100 calories an hour can transition into 300 calories an hour in a week. But start adding a little bit more. And then on some of the longer runs where you're really not so concerned about your pace, but you are going to stop and look at the view, or you are going to stop and refill your water bottle, something like that, you know, then try and push those calories up a little bit. See where it goes from there. Because not everybody can train to eat that much. You know, if you're a smaller woman, maybe 200 calories an hour might be looking pretty good.
So how do you know when you've had too much? Is that when your stomach turns on you and you have to go over the bushes?
Yeah. During training, that's what I, you know, laughingly say, eat till you're sick. You know, once you start trying to eat too much, you'll know it. You know, you'll feel like your stomach's starting to get a little bloated, or, you know, things are kind of backing up a little bit, that kind of feeling. But then you might say, okay, well, it didn't happen for 3 hours. So maybe if I just cut it down a little bit, I can still manage to get in more calories than I thought I could in those same 3 hours. Or maybe I can eat, that's what I'm talking about, experiment and training. Maybe I don't need anything the first hour. Then maybe I can kind of eat quite a bit for the next couple hours. But then the next hour where I hit those steep ups or steep downs, I need to back off a little bit. Often downhill fast running is pretty jarring on your stomach. Uphill, you're using a lot of calories, but if you're walking uphill quickly, that's a good time to eat.
And I think one of the things that I've done is if I know I have a major climb coming up, I make sure that 20 minutes, a half hour before then, I'm already fueling up for that and mm-hmm. kind of put that into my decision-making process when to eat, because I don't want to go up that thing empty. And whether it's
exactly.
psychological or not, I don't bust my bubble. I know it helps me, so
I agree.
I've
yeah. had a similar experience. I got to eat before a big hill, or I've also eaten on the hill, but I don't know if that was too late. It worked for me, but I don't know, Sunny, you said it's a good idea to eat on the hill. Is it ever too late to eat on the hill?
No, I don't think it's too late to eat on the hill. I think it's even better, though, as both of you state, to eat for the hill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I eat on the hill for the next hill.
And that too. The hardest place to eat, and it's harder to also, be putting some food or something in your mouth when you're going downhill at a pretty good pace and you're trying to, keep from falling on your face.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a downhill jarring that's the hardest. But I think that is also part of the transitioning from a marathon runner into a trail runner is we literally eat on the run.
Mm-hmm.
Where a marathoning, if you're going to eat, you usually kind of stop and walk through the aid station. You drink on the run, but you don't always eat on the run.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the big topics that I noticed transitioning from a marathon to an ultra is my stomach. Like, I had some serious issues when I made that jump. I had trained with a good food. And like you said, rule number three is be flexible. And I had to learn how to be incredibly flexible. So I wanted to ask you about ways to kind of handle your stomach during an ultra and what to be prepared for and just some good resources maybe to have in your pack. Like, I know I carry Tums, but if you're having a stomach problem and you're at an aid station, what do you tell people to reach for?
If you don't have Tums or something like that, often Mountain Dew or some sort of drink like that will help, and salt will help. Sugar will not. So don't reach for the Oreo cookie or the sweetness then. Try for salt and try for sometimes a little bit of that bubbly helps some people. For me, it doesn't. I can't take the bubbles, but I'm rare.
Soup. Oh, is soup just the best thing that they serve at those aid stations?
It's really good, but you're thinking of longer ultras because there's not always soup in a 50K.
It takes me a long time to run a 50K, Sunny. I use soup.
And then there's that. Soup's a great alternative if they have it. A lot of times, though, soup is not until it's getting cooler in the evening or you're going through the night, some of that. But the reason the soup tastes so good is it's the liquid and the salt.
You talked about eating and running, and we just had a chance to speak with Scott Jurek, and one of the chapters in there, whether we got to hit this one or not, but I just remember looking at one of the chapters in the book, it talked about learning to be an abdominal breather, and I've got to study some more of that, but one of the qualities to that, he explains, is that you're able to eat and breathe through your nose so that you're, not obviously a mouth breather. It's kind of hard to eat and breathe through your mouth. So maybe part of learning to eat and run at the same time is learning to breathe through your nose while you're eating.
I think that's very true. And I also think that that kind of breathing really holds in your gut and holds your stomach tight, so it's not jostling around so much. Sometimes ultra runners will purse their breath a little bit, blow their breath out in their cheeks a little bit. If you tend to do that, you'll instantly tighten your abs a little bit, and you also hold the oxygen from your breath in just another nanosecond or two longer, but that's more oxygen to your muscles that are starving for oxygen.
So you asked earlier, Faith, what does Scott eat on a run, right? During a run, what does he pack in his pack?
What do you pack, Scott?
You know, it all depends on how long of a run it is. You know, if it's just a, I don't know, I would say anything less than 4 hours, just for ease, I'm a gel guy. I like specifically Goos and Cliff Shots. Mm-hmm. And if it's a longer run, I'll treat myself. I love Stinger waffles. Mm-hmm. Don turned me onto those, and Stinger waffles are a treat. And I also like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I'll pack one of those for a longer run.
And I think that's interesting how different people's stomachs react to different things, because I love the taste of the honey stingers when I'm off the trail, but when I'm running, my stomach can't handle it. Mm. But peanut butter and jelly works for me. So I don't know. It's just something in the waffle that I experimented with, and unfortunately, I can snack on them at home, but not during a run.
Crunchy or well, smart with peanut butter.
One of the important...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that I found when I first started running, you know, 50Ks, even in a 50K or even pushing it to a 50-miler, I do very well with gels, but near the end of those races, I cannot stomach. I start dry heaving when I put a gel in my mouth. So I have to transition from gels to a different kind of food in those longer runs.
I think that's true. I think that's true. That's certainly what I do. I can go with the gels for a long time, but then I want something a little saltier. I know I used to use those Mojo bars by Cliff. They have salt. They're a salty, nutty flavor. Mm-hmm. And if it's a 50-mile and the race is slow enough, you know, you can eat that. Otherwise, that might be too much fiber. I just tried a new product called Tailwind, and it's kind of everything. It's a sports drink that you mix up, and so it's the usual calories, but it also has quite a bit of electrolytes in it, some potassium too. And it has a slight salty taste to it because there's some sea salt in it. And I liked it, especially after a while, because it wasn't that sweet taste.
Hmm. What flavor did you like?
I tried the lemon, and I also tried one of their other flavors. I don't know, it was a blueberry or berry flavor. I like both of them. They're not really strong.
Hmm. You know, Sunny, I'm very interested. We just ordered some of that Tailwind product, and when I talked to the manufacturer, they were saying that it's, I think if I can remember the quote, they said it's not so sweet, but it's very savory, which I'm not sure what savory means. But I'm very excited to try it.
Yeah, try it, because especially if you've had enough Gatorade and all the flavors that are slightly fruit juicy like that, I think you'll find it's a little different. And I like it because there's a lot of sodium in it. I think it'd be really good for the heat.
You know, one thing that I like on the longer trail runs, I like to put something in that pack that I can look forward to, like a reward. When I mm-hmm. get to this point, I'm going to get to eat this. And so I like giving myself little rewards as I make it through there.
And I think that's one of the reasons the aid stations have the smorgasbord out there. It's because it is a reward. You get so far down the line and you think, wow, that's just a familiar comfort food that I want, like a payday or something like that, something that I just, you know, it's really going to make me feel good, and I don't really care exactly what I need right now. And it does, it helps your brain. So no matter how far we go with the science, every once in a while you just want to go with what your gut says, reach for that and take it.
Sunny,
Don, what is your reward?
Whatever you've been carrying, Scott.
Whatever I'm muling for you?
Yeah, whatever you're muling. And Sonny, to that point, maybe our gut is much smarter than we think. Maybe our gut's really picking off that table exactly what we need.
Sometimes I think it is, especially sometimes a runner will be there and they're just staring and staring, and then they'll see something and they'll just take it. And it could be the watermelon or the oranges because they're actually kind of thirsty. It could be the potatoes and salt because their body's craving salt. I think sometimes our body does do that. And that, you know, brings me to the third rule, race with flexibility. So I think it's good if you've formulated a plan, you're going out, you're planning on taking a gel every 30 minutes, taking water every 15 minutes or something, and you do that for 3 or 4 hours, and then, you know, you run into some problems, or, you know, just we all ran into that little low spot. And at that aid station, you might go, well, it was time for me to eat a quarter of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but I see that bar over there and that watermelon, and that's what I really want. So go for it.
Sunny, I was going to ask you if you had to choose your top, like, four go-to items on an aid station, what would they be and why?
I would go for the gels because of their obvious use that, by trial and error. We've all done many ultras on gels, so I would go for that. I would go for the sports drink or water and potato and salt if it was a hot day. I'm definitely going to be looking for that salty flavor and getting the actual sodium in. Mm-hmm. If I were having a slight upset stomach, or I was starting to go into the night, or I'd been on my feet for hours and hours and hours and I was getting really sleepy, I would go for the Coke or the caffeinated drink. And for the fourth, I would probably go for the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, because somehow or another, when all else fails, it just, if you're starting to get hungry, or you just feel like you want a different flavor and maybe even the texture of something to chew on, those things have been around forever and they're still around. And I think we all use them from time to time. They last well in the heat. You know, the volunteers may have been there for 10 hours, but the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are still working. So I think those are probably my four.
Some aid station workers have told me they're toasted now if they've been out there for a while. No, there's
if they're in bad water, they started that way.
Toasted variety. You mentioned caffeine. Scott, go ahead. I didn't want to step on you. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask Sunny. You know, I can't remember how far back it was on one of our very first podcasts, or maybe it was, yeah, I think it was. Anyway, Sunny had mentioned a treat that she would make for people that she would pace in these longer runs, and that was sweet potatoes with salt in a gel. Can you explain what you do there, Sunny?
I bake the sweet potato. I smash it all up, take the skin off for sure, add a bunch of salt to it, and I usually add just a little bit of oil because I'm often putting it in those squeeze tubes that I can pass back and forth. They're not messy. They're easy for a pacer to carry, and the oil just makes it a little bit more palatable and able to squeeze out of the tube a little bit better. If you are doing a drop bag where you have something just sitting in a plastic bag that you're going to toss, you don't need the oil in it. But that works really well. One, it's just a different taste. It's called sweet potato, but it's not sugar potato. You know, it just tastes slightly better than a plain potato, a little bit of flavor to it. And it's got all kinds of good nutrients in it that you could probably be using about them.
I just saw on a Twitter comment, somebody talked just about that sweet potato being an ultra runner secret food.
I think it is.
Yeah. Hey, we talked, you mentioned caffeine. Any danger of taking in too much caffeine too early, starting with caffeinated goos early in a, say, an 8-hour race and caffeining all the way through?
That's a really good question, because we're talking here transitioning. So when we're transitioning from a marathon where you're taking 2, 3, 4 gels for the whole thing to an ultra where in a 50K or 50 mile you might be taking multiples of 10 gels, the caffeine becomes important. Most of the gels, if they say caffeine, they're usually about 25 milligrams of caffeine for one gel pack. So they usually don't say on the package. You have to go online to see how much it has in it. So some say 2 times caffeine. So 2 times what? So is it 2 times 25? It'd be 50. A regular cup of Starbucks coffee or Pete's coffee or strong coffee like that, and a pretty good sized cup, is probably 200 milligrams. Hmm. So most of the time we're not talking about that much. But for instance, Cliff Shot Espresso is 100 milligrams of caffeine. So
wow.
If you're used to taking goo with 25 milligrams and all of a sudden you switch over to Cliff Shot and you don't know that you're now taking four times as much, you might be looking for a bush pretty quickly. Two, you don't want to take that much too soon if you think you are going to have trouble completing the distance, because that caffeine is an ergogenic, meaning that it will help you run with less fatigue and help you run further with less fatigue than you would if you had not taken it.
Lee McKinley, who's been on the program a few different times, uses it as a reward for himself when he hits a certain mile marker. He withholds it completely and then uses it as a dietary aid as well as a psychological aid later in the race.
I've done that. I've done that. And it is. It will help you. The only person it might not help, that it might be different, and again, this is the experiment in training, is if somebody doesn't use caffeine at all. They don't drink coffee at all. If they drink tea, it doesn't really quite count because tea has very little caffeine in it compared to coffee. And the one other thing I might just add here, especially for the new ultra runner, is if you drink a cup of coffee every day, every morning, be sure you drink that cup of coffee on the day of your race.
Good point. Is caffeine a diuretic? I think caffeine is
not anymore. We used to say it was.
Oh, okay.
Caffeine didn't change. We just got better science.
Okay.
So up to two cups of coffee is not a diuretic, and in fact, it actually adds to your hydration. So now the rule is, for the first two cups, it adds to your hydration. After that, it's dehydrating. But I don't know that you're going to drink four cups of coffee before you head out the door.
Nope.
No.
Hey, I'll report back to you, Sunny, my experience with Vitargo, because I've been training with it and then racing with it too. And I've done a couple 50-mile races with it and a couple of 50Ks as I'm getting ready for my summer long race, and want to make sure that I'm doing what you're talking about, which is trying it before I get out there and pay the consequences if I don't have the right experience with it. And I've really liked it. In fact, on a recent 50-mile race, the only food that I took off the banquet table was a couple quarters of the a banana and a couple slices of orange, and that was it. The rest was all fueled by Vitargo, and I put it in a 20-ounce bottle, made it up very thick, so it was goo-like in consistency, and had a few of those along the way, several of those along the way in drop bags, or had some powder where I could refill and mix on my own, depending on the logistics of the course, and I had a very positive experience with it.
Yeah, it's those really work because, again, it's getting out of your gut really fast, gastric emptying really fast. I talked to Dave Mackey not too long ago, and, you know, he uses it almost exclusively. He said he's had problems sometimes training with it because he can't carry enough of it,
mm-hmm.
or aid patients might not have it. But if you have drop bags, that's great. And to mix it up as a thicker paste and then add water to it is great. So to use something like that, would I start out with that if I were a brand new runner? I don't know. I would in training, you know, early on. So if you had 6 months to try something like UCAN or Vitargo, where you're actually training your fat burning system a little bit more, especially with the UCAN, you're training your fat burning system. But I think if you only had 3 months to train something like that, Vitargo would probably work. I'm not sure that UCAN would. You don't want to mix it with other gels or other sweet things, because then you're taking away the fat burning tendency for it. So, you know, if you have enough time, you could certainly do some fat burning training, building up your enzymes to burn more fat versus carbs, and you'll become a better ultra runner. But you do need some time because you have to train at a low level.
So just like training cardiovascular, training our muscles, training our cartilage, ligaments, our feet, you're stating we really need to train our gut as well to play in this game.
Definitely. Because if you just train everything else and you don't train your gut, the gut can totally throw you off, even if you're in the best condition of your life. As many ultra people know if they've run 10 ultras, for sure they've had one time that their stomach went off at least.
What's the best way to clear that out, Sunny? I mean, you're in the middle of a race and things have gone south. You know it's your stomach. What do you do?
Back off a little. Sip water. Don't drink a whole bottle of water. Sip it. So you're doing that. And go towards the saltier things, not towards the sugar things. So just back off a little. If you are lucky enough to throw up, great. Then you just wipe the slate clean, and, you know, within 10 minutes or so, you can start over again.
So I had a experience where I said earlier I took Tums, and my question for you is, can you ever overdo it on the Tums?
The Tums have a lot of calcium in it, mm-hmm. and if you get too much during the race, you might constipate yourself, but I don't know that anybody cares in the middle of an ultra.
Sometimes I need that.
Yeah, right.
I never thought about Tums for that.
And there's the other side. So I don't think you can really overdo it, but I think, if you've been doing something for a half an hour to an hour and it's not working, trying to do more of it is probably not going to help.
Steer me in the right direction here, Sunny. Here's my understanding, and I've been wrong as often or more than I've been right. If you're starting to slosh in your stomach and it's mm-hmm. feeling like a water balloon, it's my understanding that you need to put some sodium in there to help transport some of that water out of there. Am I off base, or is that something?
No,
is that a rule of thumb we can use?
Exactly correct, because the water in your stomach is not doing anything. It's not helping you at all. It's not yours yet until it gets into your bloodstream. And that's part of the gastric emptying problem. That's where some of those things like Vitargo and UCAN work very well, because they get out of your stomach really fast, so you don't have that. But if you've had a bunch of sugar that's still kind of in your stomach, and then you put a bunch of water on top of it and it's all sloshing around, then no, you just got to wait until it goes through your gut. And usually to get it moving along, you need to slow down.
We talk about training food. So important is training electrolytes and sodium, and that changes with weather conditions, humidity, what you're wearing, the time of the season for you, whether you're well conditioned or getting back into condition. That's as large an element as no pun intended with your nutrition are the electrolytes, as well as a sandwich or whatever.
Huge. It's huge, because if you are dehydrated, none of the rules for sports nutrition work. Your body is smarter than you, and your brain just starts shutting things off, usually you going forward. So my steps for a new runner would include measuring your sweat rate. So that means, you know, weighing yourself on a scale in the nude, going out for an hour and not eating or drinking anything. Please don't do this at noon on the day that it's hitting 90. But coming back, you know, toweling off, peeing if you have to, and weigh yourself again. Figure out what your sweat rate is an hour. If you lost 2 pounds, it's a liter, and that's common. But sweat rates go from a half liter to 3 liters. So say, Faith, you've got a little sweat rate. It's only a half liter. If mm-hmm. you start drinking 2 liters every hour, that's just going to give you a sloshing stomach, or you're going to have to be stopping and peeing all the time. There's no use overdoing your sweat rate either. So you have to do this, and you have to kind of keep doing it. So if the weather's changing and, you know, you train in the winter and it's cold and all of a sudden it's summertime, you got to do that sweat rate again. The other thing to really keep in mind is the longer you've been running, your body gets very adaptable at holding on to the salt. So you start sweating earlier, but you don't sweat out as much salt. So if I go to a 50K where there's, you know, 30% brand new runners, I can usually pick out at least, you know, 2/3 of that 30% just by going around to see who's the saltiest. As a new runner, you're going to sweat out a lot of salt, which means you need a lot more electrolytes than you might need if you're a seasoned 10-time ultra runner.
And I see that changing from winter, spring to summer, mm-hmm. where in the beginning phases I've got a bit more salt on me, even though I've been conditioned throughout the year. There's that seasonal adaptation as well.
Exactly. Exactly. There's a new book called Waterlogged by Tim Noakes coming out. It's out, actually just out. Human Kinetics is the publisher. And I'm very anxious to finish reading. I had a galley copy, but it's fascinating. And he might be the world authority on hydration. And what's happened in the last few years is we have a lot of problems with hypernatremia. And we never had problems with hypernatremia 20 years ago. Part of that was because 20 years ago, if you didn't run a marathon under 3 hours, you didn't bother running. Now we have everybody running. So we have slower runners who have been told, you know, drink, 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 and they're over drinking. And we have better runners that have been taking too much salt tablets, or too many salt tablets. So I think that we're all going to be rethinking and talking about hydration in a different way when most of the ultra community has read and heard his new research.
I wanted to ask, Sunny, we had talked in the past about chocolate milk as your like go-to thing after a run. As you're moving from these smaller distances to the larger distances, the ultra distances, do you have to eat more after that run? And if so, what do you add on top of your chocolate milk?
Definitely something, chocolate milk would be fine, but you'd need 4 bottles of chocolate milk instead of 1. So then the healthier whole foods, the better afterwards, because now your whole body's depleted. If you've ever seen a, you know, slide of your muscle tissues before and after a marathon, it's trashed. I wouldn't even want to see one after an ultra marathon. But now we're talking about micronutrients that really help us repair every part of our body. So the closer to the source you can get with food, the better. So, you know, if you were to sit down to, not overeating, but sit down to a Thanksgiving kind of meal, that would be pretty good, you know, where you have a good lean meat or tofu or whatever protein source, a lot of vegetables, maybe some fruit. Definitely some carbohydrates, but now we're talking not the white bread and the white potatoes. Now we're talking about the sweet potato with the skin on and whole wheat pasta and things like that. So good food's the best. The chocolate milk or something like that may get you from the finish to where you can get a meal like that, depending on what ultra it is. Some have fabulous meals afterwards, and some are very remote and don't have much.
Sunny, I've seen some people that are really focused on decreasing their weights for the power to weight discussion, because that, boy, power to weight ratio out there is huge when it comes to moving yourself down the trail and up a hill, and I get that. But I think and see that some people are becoming and put themselves through deprivation of nutrition, not enough nutrients to even have power anymore. So they're trying to lose the weight, but they deplete their nutrients, and now the power to weight ratio is really off because they can't get the horsepower to move.
Right. That's a serious problem right now, because we do think losing weight helps because now you're carrying less over the mountains. Well, losing weight, a lot of weight, helps a lot if you're a marathoner, if you keep that power ratio in. But in trail running, you really want to lose body fat, but not necessarily weight. And in that kind of a thing, we could have a whole nother podcast on metabolic efficiency training, where you really have a base period of training where you cut out your grains. You cut out all your grain carbs, not your fruits and vegetables, but your grain carbs. But all your training is done in a zone 2. So a lower heart rate where you are using fat for your energy. So if you think about it, everything I've told you about, you know, eating before and making sure you restore your glycogen stores, your carbohydrate stores after your run. If you are truly training in a fat-burning state, you don't need to do that because you haven't depleted your glycogen stores. So in something like this, what you're basically doing is taking your crossover point, the point where you start burning more carbohydrates than you are fat, and you're pushing it out at the same heart rate or at a different heart rate. So say you can run up to 150 heart rate by using more fat than carbohydrates. But after that, you're using more carbohydrates. I think I said that right. So up to that, you're using more fat than carbohydrates. After that, you're using more carbohydrates than fat. Well, with the metabolic efficiency training, you will actually pretty soon be able to run at 160 heart rate before you switch over. And going on a metabolic efficiency diet loses fat. You don't always lose weight, although most people do lose weight. Most people drop weight. They drop abdominal weight, like a kind of wonderful thing. But when you really try and cut out all grain carbohydrates, you're looking at some different food choices because it's not a caloric deficit diet. You still have to keep the calories up. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to keep it up with roasted prime rib. You know, you still want to keep it up with good sources of lean protein. And you're eating a lot of cottage cheese and yogurt and eggs or egg whites. A lot of vegetables. It's a very different kind of diet, but so is the training. And not everybody has the time to do that low intensity training for a long enough period of time.
How long?
Sonny,
go ahead, Scott.
Sonny, how do you know when you're crossing that threshold? You mentioned 150 beats per minute versus 160 beats. How do you know where that threshold is as you're training to know, stay under this so that I'm burning more fat than carbs?
There's many places in the U.S., many performance labs or even some gyms that have what they call a metabolic cart, and you can be tested. But another way of doing it is to figure out what your maximum heart rate is. So if I were going to just try and say, okay, I wonder what my maximum heart rate is, I would do it several ways. There's several formulas on the Internet. It's always 220 minus your age, which isn't very accurate. There's several other formulas. I would do that, and then with the help of a friend or something, I'd go out to track and run X number of 400s, trying to keep the same, you know, rate. So you're running maybe 8 400s or 8 800s, the Yasso 800s, and the final one, as soon as you stop, you know, take your heart rate right then or have a heart rate monitor on, see what it goes up to. Figure that that's your maximum heart rate. Then go back on the Internet and figure out the zones. You know, you can, it'll tell you, you know, 65% or below. 60% or below is usually zone 2. So for me, when I did it, because I put a lot of my clients on this and I thought I should do it too, I dropped 4 pounds of body fat and gained 2 pounds of body muscle in 8 weeks. And I was pretty strict, although I couldn't have my good tortilla chips in the afternoon, which drove me nuts. But I managed to, you know, survive my 8 weeks. And then it's quite a different feeling because you really cut out the highs and lows, your ups and downs in sugar. I used only UCAN then because UCAN is really made for that fat metabolic efficiency kind of training. That's all I used when I was out. And I took my heart rate from 134 crossing off. I have a pretty low heart rate, so 134 to 148. So I can go a lot more now burning fat, and it feels good. So you'll race pretty well. And you'll realize it because when you start doing this metabolic efficiency training, when you're in that fat-burning zone, if you go out of it, you'll bonk. You feel horrible right away because now you're tapping into your carbohydrate system and you don't have any. You've depleted your carbs. So you don't want to go out and run fast on depleted carb body. That's injury. So you have a ceiling heart rate that you're going to want to train under. And that ceiling heart rate means that when you go out on a mountain run, you're running along, and then all of a sudden you have to walk to stay underneath that. So to do a 10-mile run might take you 2 hours.
So, Sonny, do you, from your website, do you offer training if a client wanted to call you and work through something like this? If they're saying, we can't wait till this next podcast, we want some attention right now. Could they call you and get set up on this?
No, I would go to endurance training
endurance
in
training.
Mill Valley, California, which is what I did.
Okay. So give us that address. You go to endurancetraining.com or something?
Endurance Performance, and I will get the website so you can put it up for sure. I think if
Perfect.
You just Google Endurance Mill Valley, you'll get it. They also have a San Francisco place. And another person who has written a great book on this, a little thin book called Metabolic Efficiency Training, is Bob Sibohar. He's got more credentials than I thought there were. And he was the triathlon Olympic coach.
Perfect.
So he knows what he's talking about.
We'll get a couple of those links, and we'll put it at the end of this podcast so that we'll be able to, people can reference those and learn more before we get back on a podcast about it, because I think it's something that I need to learn more about. Absolutely.
I think it's helpful for a lot of people, and the new runner, if they have the time, that's perfect. You know, if they have the 6 months to train and they can train that as a base, it's great, because yeah, it's a lot easier to train your fat-burning system and then add speed and add the distance and add everything else than to train all in carbohydrates. And that's certainly what I used to do, is carb, 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 carb. And I was fine in a race because they have all the aid stations and you can constantly do that. But in training, if you're running out on your, you know, running out of fuel on your training runs, sometimes it's because you can't carry enough.
Mm. Sonny, how about, because I thought about this, I think about a lot of things I probably shouldn't think about, but there's a, I really like Justin's,
Justin's almond butter.
Almond butter?
All those nut butters.
Yeah, with maple in it and the peanut
dangerous.
Butter honey. Oh, they're so good. There's like 190 calories,
yeah.
And like 191 of them are from fat, right?
I want to tell you something, though, that he doesn't advertise, and I'm surprised that he doesn't. They use the fruit seed of the peanuts and their nuts, and not so much the oil. So you are getting a really good fat from Justin's nut butters.
I know.
Well, there you go.
It tastes.
It's okay.
It tastes good as it rolls over my tongue and down down across the esophagus.
It so, should taste good. They spend a lot of time with that.
Oh, they're good. So I was thinking, why not race an entire race on that? Is that because I'm an extremist? Why not? No carbs. We're supposed to be fat burners. What if I just load myself with fat? What would happen to me, Sonny?
You would bonk.
All right.
And so, this is the reason. This is the reason. Because you're going to go out of your fat burning mode. So if you stayed within the heart rate of your fat burning, you would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But in a race, you usually don't. But this is what happens in a race. You've trained your metabolic system. That means you are burning a higher percentage of fat during your 50K or your 50 mile than the person running beside you. So you don't have to fuel as much. So you guys asked me about that stomach, you know, when you got that sloshiness and you got too much. You don't need that much. You won't need as much calories because you're burning more fat than carbohydrates. It's new. It's not new science. It's been around since the 60s. It's just we're re-looking at it.
Well, you just saved me a bunk, and and
but for sure, use those packets of
Justin's so
during your run, because when you want something else, they're perfect.
So here's my treat, you know, a Stinger with a waffle with a little bit of that Justin's on top. Oh, now that that's to die for. Yum.
That's called a treat.
If you're running with me or you see me and you're feeling a little low, I've got some of that in my pack. You just let me know.
All right.
I'll set you up.
I'm going to follow those wrappers right to you.
Hey, Scott, do you have anything else for us over on your end in front of your golden arches in between Fresno and Sacramento?
You know, I do. For the new runner, I shouldn't say new runner, we can qualify that. Someone that's transitioning from a marathon to an ultra, Sonny, what do you suggest for them to eat or drink before a training run and before a race?
Oh, good question. For the newer person going longer, you want to establish something, one, that is repeatable. So if it's some super special foods that you cannot possibly get in Fresno, you don't want to do that. So I tend to eat oatmeal, you know, I can, and I eat the packages of oatmeal, which have higher sugar in it, but on that training, you know, when I'm going for a run, that's okay. And they're repeatable. I can take them anywhere. So that, a lot of times, something else that I'll eat is a flour tortilla with hummus on it, or a flour tortilla with rice, and maybe even some black beans. I like Trader Joe's organic black beans, you know, a few of those and some rice. So those things work for me. But what do you guys eat?
Well, hang on real quick. What kind of rice? Are you eating, like, long grain white rice or brown rice? What kind of rice?
I'm usually eating, if I have a long time before, I'll eat brown rice. Otherwise, I eat basmati rice, which doesn't spike your blood sugar like most of the other rices do.
What I like, I'm with you on the oatmeal. I do the oatmeal, cook that up, and then I put a scoop of Muscle Milk Recovery.
That's what I do.
Do you?
Oh,
it's so
good.
I put
cake batter.
Protein powder.
Cake batter.
Oh, I haven't tried that one.
Oh.
I just do vanilla.
You know what? That's almost worth running an ultra just to eat that with guilt-free because I don't even feel bad.
Well, you stole my thunder.
I like it. When your mom made the cake and you stuck your finger in the frosting, it's kind of like the gels, right?
It is exactly yeah. like that. It's comfort food. You're bringing it back home.
Bringing it back home.
Well, Sunny, we appreciate you spending some time with us and providing us some trail knowledge. I mean, we get to run with you here for almost an hour and ask you all the questions that we'd like to be able to ask you about what to do and not to do. And I've learned something absolutely on this podcast.
All right. Well, that's the whole idea. Yeah. And now go out there and train and don't forget that flexibility.
There we go. Well,
amen to that.
Thank you, Sunny.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was an excellent talk where we got to go on a run with Sunny and talk about food and talk about future podcasts of our metabolic training that we're going to talk about in a little bit. Scott, thanks for joining us all the way from somewhere in the valley between Fresno and Sacramento at the Golden Arches. And Trail Runner Nation, go to the site, join up, post something in a forum, share something. Come see us on Facebook at, where are we? Don?
Facebook for trailrunners.com. I don't know.
Trail Runner Nation on Facebook and tweet at us at We Are Nation. Now, go out and run.
Nice.
Good job, guys.
All right. Hey, thanks. We're laughing and bragging and carrying on. We loaded up the wagons and we headed home. I guess half a dozen cases doesn't last that long. Come tomorrow morning, it'll be all gone. Yeah, let's turn around and leave town sounds again. Like a B-double-E-double-O. Double